Neil Delamere's Sunday Best. Today
FM. Our next guest is one of the smoothest football show hosts in the business. Whether you knew him from the Totally Football podcast, his long stint at Guardian Football Weekly, or when he first appeared on our screens as a callow youth, a mere slip of a lad with football Italia, it's always a pleasure to hear from James Richardson. Good morning, James.
Good morning to you, Neil.
I feel like I should call you AC Jimbo. Is that okay?
It's fine by me, yes, absolutely.
So Totally Football Podcast is coming to Dublin. What can people expect? Yes. Who are you bringing with us? What are you giving away? There's a DJ set, I believe.
There is a DJ set, actually. And to economise, we're getting one of the guests to do the DJ set. Pat Nevin, who used to play a bit and has a lot of interesting things to say about football as well. So he's there principally as a panellist, but he will be spinning some discs in his old-fashioned way, before the show.
I do hope that he has some sort of costume change. He doesn't literally just put down the headphones and then walk across and sit down beside you.
No, I think very much so. That's contractual.
Yes. Yeah, it's all about keeping the cost down when you're doing a podcast. Apart from, we'll come back to the Totally Football show, but people in Ireland will probably know you from Football Italia from the start, which people remember so fondly. There was some degree of luck in you getting that. Like, you were only 26, weren't you?
Probably. I think it was, 26 sounds about right. It was 1992, and it was extremely fortuitous. I did my best not to get the job. I kind of explained quite patiently to the man who was going to employ me that I didn't really know much about football and had never presented before. But there was a kind of unique combination of them not having much time or any money, which and plus the fact that I spoke Italian, which was the kind of defining characteristic of the job I was supposed to be doing. Because originally I was just meant to be a presenter with the odd bit of reporting thrown in. Sorry, a producer with the odd bit of reporting thrown in. But after 3 weeks of trying to get Paul Gascoigne to turn up to do the links, they just went, look, can you just present this show anyway?
Yeah, it's lesser of two evils in terms of the odds. But I mean, that's where you get the job at the start. But I think the reason it lasted for a bit longer than that was, there was a certain kind of alchemy there. It wasn't long after the 1990 World Cup, which England did well in, and it was our first World Cup, and we were basking in this time of football. It was the only live football on telly, also the best players in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, from an English point of view, Gazza was a huge draw, particularly because he hadn't played in about 18 months when he finally came back and made his debut for Lazio. But I think everyone had happy memories of the World Cup in 1990. Looking back, it may not have been the highest quality of football at the time, but it just seemed a very romantic time. Those locations, the stadiums seemed amazing. And of course, this was a league, as you say, it was the only live football really on terrestrial TV at the time. And it was being played out against the backdrop of all the same stadiums that had been favourites in the 1990 World Cup, and a lot of the same players as well. So nowadays, a show like that, I don't think would have the same impact, or I'm pretty certain it wouldn't have the same impact. But back then, we weren't used to seeing the likes of Van Basten or Stoichkov or later on Ronaldo, etc., freely available on our TV screens if it wasn't a major tournament.
So did you have any idea how big you were becoming in the UK if you were in Italy all the time, or did you just pop back and then suddenly start to get recognised? And it's a bit weird.
I never got that big, but I would get recognised. It was slightly strange being in Italy, where essentially I was just a guy kind of turning up and doing whatever, and there was never any kind of particular awareness of what I was doing, and that felt more normal. Coming from somebody who essentially had just been a behind-the-scenes guy anyway, that bit felt more normal. So when I did come back to England, if people did and say something, it was very gratifying, but that never felt kind of the normal side of things.
People have been texting in their questions for you. Do you think the Milan team of the early 90s was the best ever? That's from Terry in Limerick.
The best ever team anywhere in football ever?
Yeah, it's a big question.
Well, I guess the thing is that a lot of people wax very lyrical about Barcelona. And in 94, an understrength version of that Milan team, now, of course, under the aegis of Capello, but with key players out, took on Barcelona in the European Cup final and beat them 4-0. The game was never even in question. So you could make a strong case for it for that. How that Milan team would deal with, say, Man City, I don't know, but I suspect Man City wouldn't enjoy anything like the opportunities that they get from most teams these days. Let's say yes, Terry.
Yes, let's say yes. In his opinion, who's the most talented player to play in Serie A? Are you going to go for Baggio?
That's That's a tough one. He just seemed different to everybody else. I don't know if you could put him alongside Ronaldo, for example, you know, the phenomenon Ronaldo, and have them do a series of tricks side by side and see one, which one rated better. Maybe Ronaldo was more technically gifted, but there was something about Badger that was just so different that it feels wrong to put anybody above him.
Even to the extent of being Buddhist in the cradle of Catholicism as well, he just went his own way. Can we go back to the current project which is Totally Football? What are people going to see at this that they wouldn't see during a podcast? Is there anything different? Obviously, when you're live in front of an audience and you don't have the same legal constraints, there's a bit more crack and a bit more kind of sailing close to the wind, isn't there?
Well, the first thing they're going to see is our faces, which sadly is not an option for them during the podcast. So it's a more direct one-to-one affair, depending on the size of the audience, of course. But no, it's more of an intimate, I think, even rather than us being talking at you through your headphones or whatever. Certainly, the fact that we're not recording it or putting it out means that people can be slightly freer in their comments or fresher with the ribaldry of their anecdotes. That's certainly been the case in the past when I have visited with another podcast. We've been able to kind of bring out from the closet one or two skeletons.
Yeah, the other podcast you're referring to there, I'll mention it because obviously it's more difficult for you to do it. The Elephant in the Room, The Guardian Football Weekly, 2006 to 2017. Must have been tough to leave, but I've noticed because I've listened to both podcasts and do listen to both podcasts that you are able to, when you're doing your own thing, you're able to kind of take some risks with the new one. Like you've had kind of unusual people in it. It's not just ex-footballers. You had the doctor, Dr. Tom Markham, I think, who's a doctor, a PhD in football finance. So it does afford you a little bit more of an opportunity to stretch the legs in some regards.
Yeah. There was nothing wrong with the old Football Weekly, and I think it's actually picked up after my departure. I think it's a very good listen. I think that, as you say, it was 2006 to 2017. There was a feeling perhaps that we were just treading water. It's not that we've made any radical changes to the whole format or subject matter. We're still doing a show about football with people sitting around and opining. But it just felt for us like a little bit of fresh air. And I think myself, the producer particularly, felt that he needed to spread his wings a bit. And one of the things that this does allow us to do is make podcasts about other things, which we're having got totally up and established. We're now beginning to do with it's a couple one. There's some other ones in the works as well. So yeah, it should offer us the chance to do other things. But in the meantime, we're essentially four guys sitting around talking about football, but we are going to do it in front of people on the 19th, which is very exciting.
You kind of remind me of Bill O'Hurley, God rest his soul, now he's gone. He was an anchor here, a brilliant sports anchor here, and I think you remind me of him in terms of, I think sometimes you know more than you're letting on to know, and you conceal it to get the best out of your guests, I think. I'm not sure if that's the case or not, but that's how it comes across anyway. You're sometimes hiding your light under a bushel to serve the greater good. Couple of more listener questions to before I let you go, James. Is The Miracle of Castle del Sangro the best football book ever, or do you have a recommendation for another one?
Neil, I have to make a really embarrassing admission here. I've never read Castle del Sangro.
Oh, it's brilliant.
It's an extraordinary business. John McGuinness really should do a sequel, because what happened afterwards with the star player arrested coming off the train with a bag of drugs and the match fixing and all that stuff really should be covered. I think it's hinted at a bit in that book from what I understand, but it's on my to-do list. It's about number 57,000, but it's on my to-do list.
Okay, and has James...
Another book?
Yes, go on.
Yeah, another book. Just briefly, I think, you can't go far wrong with John Foote's Calcio. There's so many brilliant stories in there. You can dip in and out of it. It's comprehensive and encyclopedic and, I think, an excellent primer on the world of Italian football.
Has James been to Venezia? I read an article that said tourists don't go there, but the ultras make everyone sing the songs and the atmosphere is brilliant.
I haven't been there in a year or two, certainly not since Pippo Inzaghi took over and started doing such a brilliant job. We used to go quite regularly when they were in Serie B and then in Serie A. They had a succession of players Recoba was there for a while, who had an amazing partnership with Pippo Maniero, who was kind of like a poor man's Eric Cantona. And it's one of the most unique stadia in the world, because it's basically right on the end of that kind of archipelago of about 120 islands that makes up Venezia. So when you get out there, basically all you've got on the other side of the stadium is the lagoon, and in which football is often end up. And the players turn up by boat, which is nice to get like a water taxi.
That is pretty cool.
So, yes, I have been there. I didn't know that the ultras made everyone sing the songs, but that sounds entirely Venetian.
And if it's Inzaghi's there, the atmosphere is going to be good, and also probably the only stadium that's actually offside at all points. The tickets are €25. They're on sale now to the Totally Football Show. You can check out the totallyfootballshow.com or at the Totally Show on Twitter, and the tickets are on www.ticketmaster.ie and the usual outlets nationwide. Thanks a million, James Richardson.
Not at all, thanks.
Neil Delamere's Sunday Best. Today FM.